My name is Patricia Kathleen, and this podcast series will contain interviews I conduct with female and female-identified entrepreneurs, founders, co-founders, business owners, and industry gurus. These podcasts speak with women and women-identified individuals across all industries in order to shed light for those just getting into the entrepreneurial game, as well as those deeply embedded within it. Histories, current companies, and lessons learned are explored in the conversations I have with these insightful and talented powerhouses. The series is designed to investigate a female and female-identified perspective in what has largely been a male-dominated industry in the USA to date. I look forward to contributing to the national dialogue about the long overdue change of women in American business arenas, and in particular, entrepreneurial roles. You can contact me via my media company website, wild.agency, that's WILDE.agency, or my personal website, patriciakathleen.com. Thanks for listening. Now let's start the conversation. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. This is Patricia, and I am so happy today to be sitting down with Kelly Twitchell. Kelly is the co-founder and CEO of Access Tracks. And I just want to say welcome, Kelly, today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here speaking with you.
Me too. I love your company, and I love what it does, and I can't wait for you to kind of unpack that all for us. Mm-hmm. Just really quickly, for anyone who is looking to, I always like to drop a website in the near beginning. It's Kelly's website is www.accesstracks, that's TRAXSD.com. And a roadmap for today's interview, I'm going to be touching briefly on Kelly's academic history and professional life following academics. Then we'll get into what Access Tracks is and what it does, when it was launched, what stage it's in, funding, all of those interesting questions. Then we'll climb into goals for the next 3 years that Access Tracks may have, including scaling and other things like that. And then we will wrap up everything with advice that Kelly has for other entrepreneurs that are in the same boat or even a little behind or a little ahead, because we all like to hear each other's stories and share in that. So let's just start off with your brief academic history and professional life following that.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in San Diego, and I went to high school here. Following that, I went to San Diego State University, where I had my degree in biology. I always knew that I wanted to do something in the healthcare field, and so when I started, I wanted to have a degree in psychology. That quickly changed, as it does for many people in college, and I ended up with a degree kind of going towards pre-med. So I was going to go to medical school after. Towards the end of my senior year, when I was supposed to be applying for grad schools, I felt like something wasn't right. So I ended up not applying to medical school right away. I actually explored even naturopathic medicine for a little bit to see if that was something that would be more aligned with my values with medicine. But even that wasn't quite there yet for me. So I took a year off after I graduated, and I worked in cancer research, and I also worked at a golf course and really just kind of interviewed people, asking them what they did and if they liked it and if they would recommend it.
And that's awesome. You took a survey of people. What do you do? Maybe I'll do that.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
You know, I wanted to make sure that before I spent so many more years and money on my furthering my career in education, that I was really sure about it. Because too often you find people who switch careers right away and they have those student loans and it's just more challenging. Not that it's impossible, but so I found occupational therapy during that year off, and I applied to the University of St. Augustine for Health Sciences in San Marcos, California, and I got in. I was a little naive of myself to not apply to other schools too, but it just felt right. I don't know, in my gut, I felt like that was where I needed to go.
Nice, yeah.
And so that's where I earned my master's degree in occupational therapy, and I graduated in the fall of 2017.
Okay, and what did you do following the master's?
So right after I graduated, I was hired on as a pediatric occupational therapist. I worked for one company that was contracted out with multiple schools as well as two clinics here in San Diego. And I just kind of found my bearings in the field. But it was actually before I left St. Augustine while I was earning my master's degree when the BeachTrax product was invented. So simultaneously, okay, as I was trying to, you know, make a career in occupational therapy, I was also trying to start this business. So it was, again, in fall of 2017 when I graduated. The product was invented a year prior in 2016 in our assistive technologies class. And then the actual company was founded in the month of February in 2018. So a really busy couple of years trying to graduate, trying to, you know, make a product, trying to, you know, make a company out of that.
Yeah.
But it was really exciting.
So it was, as you mentioned launching the product in school, and what was the impetus for doing that then?
Yeah. So it was in the fall of 2016 in our assistive technologies course. Our professor had challenged us to create some sort of device that would help people with disabilities. I mean, it was just a class project. And my business partner, then classmate, and I always worked on projects together because we really worked well on things together. And we took on that challenge. We said, okay, well, we'll try to make something that would help her adaptive surfing friends cross the sand at the beach to be the surfers that they are, the athletes that they are, with dignity and independence. So these adaptive surfers might be somebody who uses a wheelchair or a walker, but then when they're in the water, they can surf better than a lot of people. So right, they just do it in an adaptive or a different way than what we might be used to.
Right. So you chose to take it on, and that, I'm assuming, that was kind of the launch or the beginnings of AccessTrax.
You know, actually, because we were so busy with school, and then it was the following year that we were in field work, and we were not even in the same city for a lot of it. So it would have been really hard to found the company then, but we were definitely laying down the groundwork. So we were, you know, trying to figure out the funding issue, because having a handmade prototype is great until you really need to prove, you know, that this product works, right? And so we ended up competing in a global business plan competition that we found out about through our school. It was hosted by the company that owned our school, and that was in the summer of 2017. So it was, you know, the year following of us actually inventing the handmade prototype. And then the following summer, we were finalists in that global business plan competition. It was really crazy because we only found out about this competition 6 weeks before the deadline, when a lot of teams from all over the world had 6 months or more to prepare for this.
Wow.
So being the finalist, being one of the six final groups, was incredible. We were the only team from the United States to become a finalist. We were the only team who had ever competed and become a finalist from the University of St. Augustine schools. So that was cool.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And we ended up not being a final winner, but they were really cool. The judges actually awarded funds to people who even didn't win. So they decided that this was such a tough competition that they awarded pretty much every group some funds. So that kind of helped us get started with the prototyping for the plastic model of the product.
Right. So let's get into the product. Mm-hmm. What is it in its like simplest form? And then we can get into what it's made of and things like
that. Yeah. So essentially what BeachTrax is a foldable portable pathway system that is meant to empower people of all physical abilities to access outdoor uneven terrain. So imagine a foldable portable sidewalk that comes in. The smallest unit is a 3-foot by 3-foot square, and they're really flat, and they're hinged together in whatever length and configuration that you want and need. So essentially, it's something that you can take with you in your vehicle, even check as luggage on a plane if you're a traveler, you have a family, and you need access, or you can have it semi-permanently to permanently installed at a beach or your yard or a park.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and you said that the prototype was a different material than the plastic when you started working out with the funds that you won from or awarded from the business competition.
Yeah. So the initial handmade prototype was from materials from Home Depot. It was
nice.
It was plastic chicken mesh and lots of zip ties and aluminum rain gutter covers.
Yep.
Essentially, the concept was creating a track that would lift the wheels off of whatever surface was underneath so that the wheels wouldn't sink in and get stuck, whether that's gravel or sand. And then that first, you know, manufactured prototype that we had was made out of plastic, because that's something that you can do on a larger scale with manufacturing versus making something by hand.
Right. And so in 2017 to 2018, you were kind of designing and mm-hmm. manufacturing your prototype.
Yeah.
So was that, how many people, so I'm thinking of experts and people that you kind of have to meet with and crawl through that, you know, prototype manufacturing is no joke.
Yeah.
Like it can take a lot of minds behind it and then mm-hmm. a lot of funds just to get a simple prototype.
Right. Out. So it's funny because throughout my journey with Access Tracks and the products, I've always kind of met people who gravitated towards wanting to help us in any way they can. And some things have just blown my mind with how random it was that I crossed paths with someone and that it was meant to be kind of a thing.
Sure.
So one day I was at the beach with my boyfriend and a couple of his friends, and there were people there that I hadn't met yet, and I was working on trying to calculate some of the design pieces in the new prototype, and I had my little calculator, and this guy comes up from the group and he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, you know, I sound like a total nerd." And he goes, "Well, I'm actually an engineering student at, I think it was USD, and he said, "I'd love to help."
Nice.
And this,
excellent. Yes. Sit down. Help me out. Yeah.
Ah, yes. Yeah. I'd love to. Who are you? Thank you so much for, you know, asking, what am I doing?
Yeah.
So he ended up being the person who helped us with the AutoCAD file, so the mm-hmm. kind of the computer file to turn our idea into something that was viable, that you know, could be manufactured. That was the missing piece. Because I don't have a business background, I don't have an engineering background, I have my OT creative side and my passion for this, but I definitely was missing those technical pieces.
Right.
So, yeah, he helped us create those files. And then from there, my business partner, Eric, did the research on what companies were local that could work with a startup for prototyping. So he found the first company that we worked with.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so you found a local company you can mm-hmm. go in and communicate with and get your prototype.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the next stage? Are you at 2018 where you have product launch, or is that when you hit the accelerators or are you looking for funding? What's happening?
Right. Then? So actually in 2017, after we were finalists in the Global Business Plan competition, we still needed more money. That wasn't enough to carry us through to the final prototyping. So we ended up presenting in front of the board of directors of our school, and they surprised us matching the funds that we won. So then we were at the point where we had the funding we needed to get the prototype.
Okay.
Which was fantastic. And then so Eric found that company in San Diego. They, you know, developed a plan that essentially used up all those funds for creating kind of a prototype. And that prototype is not the final prototype that would carry us through to our product launch.
Right.
So we ended up getting feedback, testing the product, and realizing very quickly that design isn't really something that we were going to use in the end. We wanted something more what's called universally designed. And that concept just means that device or that product can be used by generally anyone without any sort of special training or modifications. So with the original prototype that was manufactured, it was kind of an H shape. Mm-hmm. And that meant that really only people who use wheelchairs could use it. It wasn't ideal for people walking, or it wasn't even ideal for making turns. So I ended up asking that particular manufacturer if they would help us. Okay, we want to kind of scratch that and just, you know, improve upon the design, which is natural. And they kind of refused, so we ended up going with another local company,
right,
who was totally willing to do whatever, and we've stuck with that company since then.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of willingness, who wouldn't, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't have obstinate attitudes in the beginning of conception.
Yeah, it was kind of tough. I was a little surprised, but I feel like what I found out later as I was looking into the patent process, I truly believe that that person found an existing kind of patent in the patent search, meaning that it doesn't necessarily have to be in effect right now, but it's called prior art. When anyone submits a patent, whether it goes through or not, it becomes official in the system. And I think that he saw one that was in there and he wanted to go with that. Mm. And it just wasn't going to work out.
Like, yeah.
You got to be able to be flexible and kind of go with the feedback of who's using it,
right,
and the company who's, you know, paying for it. So
did you search for another set of funding, another round, if you will, mm-hmm, or the first round to get your second prototype?
Well, you know, Eric and I put in a couple $1,000s each to help. At that point, I had actually asked my dad to help as well, so he let me borrow $2,000 to help out. And we were both employed at this time. We had just, you know, graduated from OT school and got jobs right away, which was helpful.
Yeah.
But we knew that wasn't going to last because of student loans and everything else and how expensive a startup is, really. So we ended up getting a business loan from an Adaptive Surfer who really, really believed in us and in the products.
Nice.
And it was so fantastic because it was from a supporter, you know? And he didn't want equity in the company. He didn't want to tell us what to do. He just believed in it. And he knew that this is something that needed to happen. And somebody, he was somebody who could directly benefit from it.
User. I mean,
right.
Crucial, a customer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's an amazing kind of turn of events to think about funding that way or raising funds that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a second prototype. Is mm-hmm. that the one that you guys took to launch in 2018?
Pretty much. We had just one or two very small changes to the design, but it was nothing major. So yeah, pretty much that was going to be what we launched.
And then once you launched, what did you guys do after that?
So once we launched, we really focused on trying to get the word out beyond our very local community of Adaptive Surfers, which they were definitely the early adopters, people who had seen us from that first handmade prototype,
mm-hmm.
Because we used it with them and got feedback from them that first day at an Adaptive Surfing competition. So once we expanded from there, it was natural that the World Adaptive Surfing Championships happens here in San Diego every December. So
right.
That was really cool to go to that event and kind of expand, still Adaptive Surfers, but from all over the world. And that kind of opened our eyes to those possibilities. So actually our second customer ever was international. It was the Japan Adaptive Surfing Organization.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. So how did you continue on with your trajectory? So you went to the, you know, the Adaptive Surfing competition.
Mm-hmm.
You included that community. But how did you expand your scope into mm-hmm. reaching other customers?
Yeah. So we volunteered a lot at different adaptive sports events, not necessarily adaptive surfing events. And that expanded that possibility. I really started to talk to the city of San Diego. We have a great program for like beach wheelchairs and mats here. And I kind of did my research in looking at those existing mats. So our competitor, really, they're a roll-up mat. And unfortunately, they're so bulky and mm-hmm. heavy and expensive, and they're not user-friendly for not only the people setting it up, but for people who use certain mobility devices, such as maybe a heavier power chair. I've seen people get stuck at the beach on one of those, and it's just like, oh, now what do? You just wanted to go have a nice day at the beach, and now,
right.
Now you have to ask for a lot of people to help you. So I was talking to the supervisor that is in charge of their beach mat and beach wheelchair program, mm-hmm. and he's always been willing to talk to me and meet with me and kind of brainstorm on how we could work together, because there may not be, a lot of money in the budget for switching from one product to another now, but I know that as those existing mats get more dangerous because they're fraying, they're ripping, they're old.
Yeah.
That they definitely needed to know about us. So mm-hmm. that was one thing. And I demoed to a number of different state parks and city beaches. And in March of this year, I actually demonstrated to the National Park Service in San Francisco. And within 15 minutes, they knew they wanted to purchase. So
congratulations, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's the Golden Gate Recreational Area, and nice. They're actually the number one visited park in the United States National Park System.
Fantastic. So big fish on your yes. first cast. That's good.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
So kind of from there, we're really kind of pivoting to focus on the national parks, because they're such a natural customer. They serve a lot of people in the community. And they're outdoors. I mean, they're all pretty much outdoor areas. And the challenge for them is staying within a budget, right? And preserving the natural habitat, the natural environment in their parks. You don't want to put cement over everything. And with beach tracks, it can be used as kind of a permanent solution, but it doesn't ever damage the environment.
Right.
And you can move it if it's something that you don't want to have there all the time. So we've been in talks with a couple of other parks that are really interested as well. So it's really kind of cool to be a part of their story in their initiatives to make their parks more accessible to all guests.
Absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can think of several off the top of my head right mm-hmm. here in California. Yeah. So over the next 3 years, what is your, do you have a goal vision in mind? With Eric, do you guys have a plan as far as scaling, or what are your main goals over the next 3 years?
Yeah, let me just rewind just a moment, that it was right after the National Park Service in March of this
okay.
year
uh-huh.
that I actually took on a new business partner. His name is Julian. He's had prior startup experience, and kind of going back to the funding issue, we definitely needed more kind of either family and friend business loans or
right.
some sort of funding. And Julian is a friend of a friend who kind of watched the company grow. And after Eric took a step back from daily operations in June of 2018, I quickly knew that I needed somebody else to come help me actually do the work. I was at this point, I had to scale back to part-time at my OT job. So money was really tight, trying mm-hmm. to, fund the startup and figure that out. So I did that by myself for almost a full year, which was really challenging but eye-opening. And Julian expressed interest in, I think it was late February of this year, that he wanted to come on as kind of an investor, an advisor. So he also purchased equity in the company. It was the end of March. And so really kind of moving forward, the vision of the company is shared between myself and Julian and Eric as well. But he had to take a step back because he was, starting a family and mm-hmm. really wanting to focus on that and limiting his risk. And I completely understand that. There's really tough decisions that you have to make at certain points in your life. And having a startup and realizing that you might have to keep dumping money into it to keep it going and invest a bunch of your time while, paying student loans and trying to provide yeah. for a family, that's hard. So.
Okay, so Julian came on board.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. And he is serving as an advisor and an investor mm-hmm. and kind of like this subtle partner in
yes.
a way. And so you're looking at the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's just come on in February.
Mm-hmm.
We're in August.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new marriage. What are you guys thinking about for the next 3 years? Do you have a scale or a goal for the next 3 years?
So I think what we're trying to do now is really kind of scale what we've done with the national parks here in the United States, and also focus on our partnerships that we've established internationally. So we have a partnership with a nonprofit in Costa Rica who advocates for accessibility in their country. They're also related to their adaptive surfing team down there.
Cool.
So kind of fostering that growth, as well as a partnership with a nonprofit in Canada and the adaptive surfing team in the United Kingdom. So I think what we're looking to do is kind of ramp up not only the sales here in the United States for kind of government sales, but also internationally, how we can help other communities and with those partnerships so that we're not doing everything alone.
Right.
So we're also open to things like licensing the technology so that other countries can manufacture it.
To get a global reach.
Yeah, you know, that's exciting to me. So I definitely don't have experience in all of those things, so we're looking to get into other accelerator programs that can help us with manufacturing scaling as well as exports. And we qualify for a program called CMTC that's California-based for manufacturing. And that starts, I should be paired with a mentor any day now, which is really exciting.
Nice.
And then
what does it stand for, CMTC?
CMTC.
It's just another acronym. People are going to kill me.
Yeah, I have to look at that one again, but I think it might be California Manufacturing something.
Yeah, got you. Yeah, so they're going to partner you. So let's get into that a little bit. With the mentorship, it sounds like you and Eric were babes in the woods, you know, both of you meeting as students and the idea coming about. And prior to Julian coming on board in February, you have received mentorship, right, under Connect All that you're departing from, I should say, after your six-month tenure. Have you received any mentorship along the way, either with Connect All or prior to that, or your school, that has been instrumental in helping you with the process?
Yes. So before I even applied and heard about Connect All at the Jacobs Center, I was receiving mentorship a lot through SCORE.org. They're a national mentorship program. It's basically a coalition of retired entrepreneurs, and they mentor you for free. And you get paired with really anybody who fits kind of what you're looking for. So I've met with probably 10 different mentors on different topics over the last few years, whether it was from, you know, just getting down my business plan to looking for liability insurance and that kind of thing. So that was the first resource that I really dug into, and it was very helpful. And then with the Connect All at the Jacobs Center program, they also pair you with a mentor that kind of follows along. And they really have this excellent network of presenters that comes, you know, pretty much every Wednesday night. We have like class, it's like workshop. And they're all experts, usually retired or, you know, continuing entrepreneurs themselves. And they present on their expertise, whether it's financial, sales, marketing, et cetera. And we've been able to tap into that. You know, just because they're not our official paired mentor doesn't mean we can't, you know, reach out to them. So whether it's through taking down their email or connecting through LinkedIn, that's been really helpful as well.
Right. Where did you learn about Connect All?
Yeah, so this is another one of those really cool coincidences. I am part of the Accessible Travel Online community, where people from different places around the world who care about accessible tourism and travel kind of come together to help spread information and advocacy. And I joined that late last year, I believe it was. And so I'm kind of the Southern California office for Accessible Travel Online, superficial.
Nice.
But
yeah,
kind of through that, I really had a push to join different Facebook groups for people who are looking for accessible places. And one of the gentlemen who saw one of my posts on there reached out to me through Facebook, and he was local. He was right here in Del Mar. So I had a phone call with him, and he asked me some questions, and then he ended up telling me that, a few weeks later, that, I used to work for Connect, which is a very established accelerator, and he said that they were opening a Connect All at the Jacobs Center thing right here in San Diego, a startup business accelerator program for diverse founders. And by the time he told me about it, I only had 2 days to apply. So that was...
Again. This is your history.
Yes. Last minute is my expertise. It's my specialty.
There you go. Yeah. Tagline for business
card. Forced procrastination. So yeah, it ended up working out. I got in. I think it was over 60 companies applied. And, I was one of the 13. So very, very honored to be a part of this first cohort. And that's kind of the story of how I got in.
Nice. That's great. I like that. And I like the 3 years you guys have into reaching out to. It sounds like that's going to offer you a whole nother labyrinth of education and tools for your tool bag, into reaching into those markets and getting collaborative with even licensing or thinking about those things. I think stretches us as entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. So I'm kind of crawling into the final part of our chat here today, and it's my favorite. Mm-hmm. So if you, Kelly, ran into a young female or female identified individual who was just getting ready to, she'd just gotten done with her occupational therapy degree. She was mm-hmm. getting into some pediatric occupational therapy position. Mm-hmm. And
sounds
she
familiar.
Said, I think I'm going to launch this startup. I've got a great idea. I've kind of cultivated past ideation, but I don't really have anything else figured out. Mm-hmm. What are the top 3 pieces of advice you would give her?
I would absolutely say get mentors. You cannot do it by yourself. That will drive you nuts.
Right.
Because you just can't be an expert in everything. It's great to know little bits and pieces about everything so that you're never in the dark. But having access to people who can support you and guide you really, really helps. It helps prevent mistakes that were avoidable. It helps you maximize on your time and your money as well.
Right.
Because that's tough. I mean, especially graduating, you don't have a huge savings account. In fact, you might have blown through that to help with your idea. And it can be hard to ask for money from family and friends sometimes.
Yes.
But if you get a mentor who also believes in you, even if they believe in you more than your idea, that also matters. Having them believe in you and help you can give you more confidence and reassurance that what you're doing, you have a plan, and then you can ask for family and friends, business loans and help.
Right.
Because you're a little bit more assured that this isn't going to fail, mm-hmm. And now it's never going to be easy, but you can kind of have that. So definitely first point of advice is get help, get a mentor, seek that out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Second piece of advice, something that I really wish that I would have explicitly looked into and practiced before I started a business would be emotional intelligence. And we actually kind of went through this in workshop last night, in fact. And I felt like I have bits and pieces of this, but never really explicitly learned it. And emotional intelligence is just being cognizant of kind of your emotions, your thoughts, and how you're communicating those with someone else, especially in difficult conversations. So maybe you have a difficult conversation coming up with your co-founder, which is very, very common, by the way. It's actually more common than not to have difficult conversations with a co-founder.
Sure.
An employee, anybody, even an investor. So having that kind of toolkit of kind of a template for how to go through those situations and conversations really helps you with your emotional regulation of, can I put my best face forward and look at this logically? And separate my very strong and passionate emotions from what really needs to be communicated for an effective conversation that has a positive outcome.
Right.
So definitely something that I wish that I would have.
Yeah, it's studied. A good conversation to have with yourself, for sure.
Yeah, and it's not a hard concept. It definitely takes practice. But, I mean, we learned about it in just 2 hours last night. So there's a lot of great books out there, podcasts, and small essays about emotional intelligence, and I definitely suggest that people look into that. You'll be surprised at how simple the concept may be, but it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And it'll have really great results.
Do they still call it EQ?
Yes.
Back in my day, that's what they were calling it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Third piece.
Yeah. So the third piece, you know, as a person who is starting their own company, especially something from the ground up that didn't exist before, you will find that it takes a lot of your time and your energy, and making sure that you really make time for your self-care and your social fun and your me time is so crucial to not getting burnt out. It took me a few years to really realize that. And, you know, starting a few weeks ago, I made the commitment that I hadn't gone line dancing in a couple of years, and that's one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
I don't like cardio, I don't go running, I don't typically go hiking, but having that, you know, line dancing experience, it's a social thing, you're usually with other people, there's music, and it just really made me happy, and it was also a physical and social activity. And I made the commitment to myself that I was going to do that at least 2 to 4 times a month now. And it's made me happier. You know, you gotta have that time for yourself. And if you wait until you have the time, it won't be there, trust me. But if you schedule it in, just like you schedule a meeting, it'll be there waiting for you. And that's really cool. So definitely don't forget about those things. There will absolutely be times where you have to cancel that because there's a really impending, like there's a grant that I had to do the other day that it was like the deadline. I found out about it. Oh, weird. 24 hours before it was due. You know, right. It's like this common theme.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times it's happened, but you know, you got to go for those opportunities, even if it's a time crunch or difficult. But yeah, so sometimes you will have to sacrifice that,
right.
But don't make it a commonplace thing that you're always sacrificing your happiness and your me time for whatever it is. So
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I noted your three. We've got get mentors, carefully monitor and cultivate your emotional intelligence, and tend to your me time.
Mm-hmm.
I like those.
You got it.
Those are cool. Those sound like a making to a powerhouse. That's fantastic. Well, we are wrapping up today, and I just wanted to say thank you so much. I know that everyone's busy in this world. That's the tagline of, I feel, the mantra of at least this nation.
Yeah.
But I know that entrepreneurs are super duper busy. So I just wanted to say thank you so much to taking time out of your, what are very last minute schedules that seem to be always happening to
yes.
you. I really appreciate you lending your voice today.
Thank you. This was so fun. I mean, I could talk about my company in this for hours. You know, I'm so passionate about it. So thank you for letting me share.
Absolutely. I'll have to circle back around and find out what you guys are up to next year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, for anyone who wants to get a hold of Kelly or check out her company Access Tracks, you can locate it online, www.accesstracks, that's TRAXSD.com. And for everyone listening, thank you for lending me your ear for a half an hour. Until we meet next time, remember to always bet on yourself. Sláinte.